Hello, welcome to the Thorax Podcast. I'm Kate Diarmaidi, Thorax Social Media Editor and Podcast Host. Today I'm talking to Professor Klaus Bonnelicker, a professor of paediatrics at the University of Copenhagen, about a paper he published recently in Thorax, which looks at the relationship between biomarkers of house dust mite allergy and the efficacy of immunotherapy in asthma. Hi Klaus, thanks for coming to speak to us.
Hello, and thanks a lot for your interest in our paper and our work.
Great. So I wanted to start with some background to the paper, if possible. And you talk at the beginning about the fact that asthma prevalence is actually increasing. And I was just wondering if you could give us an idea about why that is.
Yeah, so that's a good question and not a question we have good answers to, actually. So we've seen this increase in allergy, asthma and other immune disorders. And it seems to be linked to a Western lifestyle, whatever that means. But we haven't really been able to identify exactly why. And I guess the most prevailing hypothesis today is that it has something to do with our modern environment, and particularly maybe the microbiome and the microbiological exposures we have that are much different now compared to what our immune system and our genetics are designed to many thousand years ago. And that is probably what is increasing this risk of immune disorders. So the hypothesis right now is that since the immune system doesn't have the same exposure as it was designed to, it starts reacting to otherwise not dangerous allergens, such as house dust mite or grass allergens, or our own proteins in the body, and causing allergic and autoimmune disorders. But the exact causes are still poorly understood, and therefore we really don't know how we can reverse this epidemic we've seen and are seeing now for asthma and allergy.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose I would know that possibly as the hygiene hypothesis for...
Yeah, so that's still very much what people are looking into, and we are at the point where researchers are always starting to do randomized trials to try to address that and introduce infants, for example, to microbial exposures, and then hopefully we can bring down this very high risk of allergic and autoimmune disorders. But that still needs to be shown.
Mm-hmm. And there's in the beginning of the paper as well, you talk about the different asthma phenotypes, and I was wondering if you could explain a bit more about the different phenotypes of asthma.
Yeah, so it's what is most clear for us is that asthma is not just one disease, and in recent years it has been suggested that we shouldn't call it asthma at all, because it's we're quite sure now it represents several different disease entities just within one syndrome, and if we call it all the same, how will we ever be better at preventing and treatment disease? But we haven't really been so successful in identifying different subtypes, but the most established subtypes we have is what we call T2 asthma and non-T2 asthma. And T2 asthma is characterized by certain immunological processes, T2 processes in the airways, and can also be established in the blood. For example, by eosinophils, blood eosinophils, or airway eosinophils. And it has been shown for several treatments, for example, asthma biologicals, that T2 markers can predict treatment response. Whereas we know less about non-T2 asthma, and this is really an area where we need to be better and understand what is non-T2 asthma. That is asthma where we don't see these T2 biomarkers in blood or in the airways. So that's an important research gap we have right now.
And so T2 is type 2 inflammation, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Related to a certain immune response by certain cytokines like IL-5, IL-4, IL-13, and typically eosinophilic inflammation in the airways.
And so one of the things that you looked at in the paper was the type 2 biomarkers. Do these just predict or the presence of asthma or the severity of asthma, or are they mechanistically important in the pathogenesis of asthma?
Yeah, so these are several of these cytokines or the cells, the eosinophils, are important in the pathology of allergic disease and allergic airway disease. And we normally see raised levels within individuals with allergic disease and allergic asthma, like T2 asthma. So if we compare patients with allergic asthma with non-allergic individuals or non-asthmatic individuals as a group, they will have higher levels of these T2 markers. But what we saw in this study was that even within a population all having house dust mite allergic asthma, these high level of these T2 markers still predicted a higher risk of developing severe asthma exacerbations. So even within a group expected to have T2 inflammation, having higher levels of these seemed associated with more severe disease and the higher risk of exacerbations. And that's also what has been shown in other studies. For example, the biologicals I mentioned, which makes sense since most biologicals we have today exactly target T2 inflammation and patients with T2 inflammation. And within these studies, it has also been shown that if you have high levels of these T2 biomarkers, you respond better to treatment.
Okay, and then just to clarify, is T2 asthma more common than non-T2 asthma? And what's the difference in the severity profiles?
Yeah, so it depends a little on the ages, but in children, you see allergic asthma. In older children, you see allergic asthma and T2 asthma being more common. Non-T2 asthma is a little more common in younger age. And in adults in different ages, you see different percentages. So we see both T2 and non-T2 asthma. What is best understood is T2 asthma. And what is also generally better treated today is T2 asthma.
Okay, thank you. Do you also... the other focus is genetic biomarkers of asthma. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about that, the genes involved in asthma.
Yeah, so it's well known that genetics play a strong role for asthma. That is, for example, seen in twin studies where comparing monozygotic and dizygotic twins have mm-hmm. shown that the heritability of asthma, the genetic influence on asthma is very high. Generally around 50%, and for childhood asthma even higher, like 70 or 80%. So genetics play a major role, and the more and more studies we do, the more we know about which genes play a role as well. And it has long been hypothesized that since genes are directly related to the cause of disease, that by understanding the genes and knowing the genetic variants that increase your risk of asthma, we should be able to understand the underlying mechanism for individuals, and that could help us predicting which type of disease the individual patient has and if they would respond good to treatment. So genetics as a biomarker of disease has long been expected to be a promising thing that we could use to develop more medication and to personalize mm-hmm. our treatment. But until now, it hasn't really been shown to be very useful, and probably because it hasn't been studied that much. One issue is that the individual genes that we know, they often have a quite small effect size. So each of them doesn't play a big role. Mm-hmm. And also, many of the big trials that have been able to study this, which are the big pharma trials, haven't really looked into genetics. So really trying to use genetics, as we do in this study, to predict efficacy of treatment hasn't been done that much yet.
Okay. And then I was wondering if you could say what the current immunotherapy management is in asthma, or the current use for immunotherapy in asthma.
Yeah, so immunotherapy is used widely for allergic disorders, allergic rhinitis. And if you have more severe disease, this is recommended. And it is the only treatment we have that can potentially cure the disease. So if you have a really good response to allergen immunotherapy, you can get rid of your allergy. And it has also been shown, as the pharma company ALK driving this study showed in their previous trial, they showed that by giving sublingual immunotherapy, they could reduce the risk of asthma exacerbations in individuals with house dust mite allergic asthma.
Is that something that is now leaked into clinical practice?
Yeah, that is something that is used today in adults with house dust mite allergic asthma to treat the allergy, which might give you symptoms from the eyes and the nose, but also to improve asthma control.
Great. So then if we could just move on to this study particularly, what did you do in this study?
Yeah, so this study was a post-hoc analysis of the previous trial demonstrating that if you give sublingual immunotherapy to patients with house dust mite allergic asthma, you can reduce the risk of severe exacerbations. And then in this post-hoc analysis specifically, the company wanted to try to identify biomarkers that predicted efficacy of the treatment, because it's well known that when you give immunotherapy, like for most other therapies, there's a very variable response to therapy. Some patients respond really well and get rid of their allergy, while others respond less well. So the company set out to try to identify biomarkers that would predict the efficacy, so to help identifying patients who really respond well compared to patients who respond not so good.
Okay, and so what did you find?
And what we found was that both factors we looked at, that was T2 biomarkers as well as genetic markers, seemed to be able to predict a beneficial treatment response. So for T2 biomarkers, we saw kind of the same tendency as has been shown for T2 biologicals, that within this group, who are all predicted to respond to treatment, those with highest levels of T2 biomarkers seem to respond better. And in these individuals with very high levels of the biomarkers, giving the immunotherapy seemed to almost take away the excessive risk from these high levels of risk biomarkers. And the same was the case for the genetics. A number of different gene variants were studied, and the ones showing up to be important were genetic variants around a locus called the 17q locus. And it was found that patients with risk variants at this locus had increased risk of experiencing severe asthma exacerbations. But after immunotherapy, this increased risk was no longer there. So it seemed that sublingual immunotherapy with house dust mites took away this genetic risk of severe exacerbations.
And was there any group within the study for whom the immunotherapy wasn't helpful?
So what we could see was that in the group with highest risk for T2 biomarkers or for genetic variants, there was a stronger effect than in the low-risk group. And in the low-risk group, there was no statistically significant treatment effect anymore. But it has to be said that when we start stratifying groups like this, it's difficult to say if there's no risk at all. But we could just see that the treatment effect was higher in the high-risk groups.
Mm-hmm. And do you have enough information to sort of justify rationing this and using it only in patients who are deemed to be high risk? Or is it something that you would continue to use across all patients with house dust mite allergy asthma?
I think for both of these findings, first of all, since this is the first study showing these biomarker potentially predicting treatment response, it would have to be shown in another study before moving into clinic. As it is now, I think it will be one of the tools clinicians might look at when they have to take the discussion with patients, if they want to try this therapy. For some, there might be no doubt they want to try this to get rid of their allergy. For others, if you're more in doubt, these supportive biomarkers could be like a supportive tool in the decision process. If we have to do fixed guidelines for who to treat and who not to treat, I think we would need a bigger study with clear, predefined cutoffs and predefined way of evaluating this.
What work do you think will be done next in this area?
Yeah, so what I hope will be done more is that other in future trials, this will be tested again. So one issue with these attempts to personalize treatment is that in order to really do it, it has to be done in big randomized trials where we can actually see if the treatment effect is better depending on you on these biomarkers. And that can almost only be done in the biggest trial run by pharma companies. So I'm really happy to see this being done in one trial, and it will have to be shown in others as well. So that is one, I think, very interesting outcome of this study, that potentially these biomarkers can be used in the clinic to help deciding which patient should be treated and who should not. And then from the research perspective, as somebody working with genetics, as we do in the Copenhagen Prospective Studies of Asthma and Childhood that I'm from, the COPSAC studies, we are looking into biomarkers like this as well. For example, the 17q locus. And we have long been interested in the 17q locus because studying children, this is the most important asthma gene we know of. And seeing now that it also plays a role in adults and for allergic asthma in adults, I think to me emphasizes the importance of this gene. And one interesting thing of the 17q locus is that generally it seems to be a non-T2 biomarker. It seems to be related just as much to non-T2 asthma as to T2 asthma. And that's also what we saw in this study. There was really no association between the T2 biomarkers and the 17q locus. So to me, this emphasizes that this locus is really a handle we can hopefully use to understand also non-T2 mechanisms. And that is really an area where we have to move forward, because we have more and more treatments coming up for T2 asthma, whereas we know very little about non-T2 asthma and non-T2 asthma mechanisms. And if we can understand that, we hopefully have another handle and in the future, maybe novel treatments for this part of asthma disease as well.
Do we know what the 17q locus does, what its role in the body is?
No. Interestingly enough, even though we have known the locus for many years now, and we have studied it for like 10, 15 years, it's still a little unclear exactly what's the underlying mechanism. We know it's related to increased susceptibility to viral infections in children. And it could be speculated, and that's one of my hypotheses at least, that this could also be why it's related to these asthma exacerbations in adults, because it's well known that if you have house dust mite allergy, you're also more prone to viral infections, for example. So the reason for seeing 17q still being important in these patients could be that they have allergic airway inflammation, and that makes them more susceptible to viral infections as well. And that's why it's even more beneficial for them to be treated with house dust mite immunotherapy. Mm-hmm. But that is only one potential mechanism. This one complicating thing about genetics is that often when we find association to a specific genetic locus, it doesn't tell us directly what's the underlying mechanism. So often there are several genes in the region, and that's also the case for the 17q locus. And several genes, for example, GSDMB and another gene called ORMDL3, seems to be involved in the asthma pathogenesis. And so both of these genes or other genes or many genes in combination could be involved in the underlying immune processes or processes related to infections. So that is something we still need to find out, and we need to be able to target that, to target the underlying mechanism as well.
Great. Well, that's all very interesting. I'm very grateful for you to coming to talk to us.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Thorax podcast. If you are interested in asthma, we have another episode of the podcast about obesity and asthma with Dr. Hayley Scott. You can find that on our feed. If you don't want to miss any episodes, please subscribe. Thank you, and we'll see you next month.